The conversation continues with James Freeman on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Hello and welcome to the second hour of today's Freeman Report. It is Tuesday, the 14th of May, 2024. My name is James Freeman. If you just joined us, you've missed a fantastic first hour of the show. I discussed mass immigration in Ireland with journalist Callum Smiles, who's been on two fact-finding missions to Ireland recently. We talked about a couple of Irish polls. So 75% of voters in Ireland now think immigration has gone too far. But a really interesting one is 50% of the Irish population, according to this poll, want border checks at the Irish border, an issue that was massive during Brexit. So the irony of it, that the Irish are now asking for border checks, is very interesting indeed. I also welcome Geoffrey Tucker to the Freeman Report for the first time. Geoffrey is founder and president of the Brownstone Institute, and he's also a senior economics columnist at the Epoch Times. We had a really interesting conversation about whether a reckoning is coming on COVID. We talked about the pandemic accord treaty at the WHO and also about censorship in the European Union. Really, really interesting conversation. If you did miss that first hour of the show, it will be uploaded to the website and the app in the next few hours. So just head over to tntradio.live and click on the episodes button, or go to the app and do the same. Click on the episodes button and there you'll be able to listen to mine and all the other hosts' shows. You'll be able to listen back or watch at your leisure whenever you want. Okay, coming up this hour, I'm going to be discussing the Middle East with private investigator and Sunday Times best-selling author Christine Hart. And then to finish off the show today, I'm going to be welcoming pollster and director of political strategy Mitch Brown to the Freeman Report for the first time. I'll be asking Mitch if Trump is in stormy waters. Like what I did there? I'll also be asking Mitch for an update on the US economy as we head towards this year's presidential election. Now, before we go over to Gemma Cooper for today's breaking news, I want to comment on stories in the Legacy Press today saying that a new weight loss jab cuts heart disease deaths by 20%. Now, I talk a lot on this show about the two issues that I see with this story. Firstly, that of big food. As although we live more sedentary lives, I think that's clear, than we did in the past, the food that we eat has changed beyond recognition. Most of what is on the supermarket shelves these days isn't real food at all. It's been designed in labs and is produced in factories using flavorings, thickeners, and other substances created by chemical processes. They are edible substances that reduce our gut health and ruin our metabolism. And they are designed to be addictive so that we eat more than we should. That is the problem of big food, which won't be solved by a jab. The second issue that I see with this push to jab people with a weight loss drug is that of big pharma. Big food makes us ill, and along comes Big Pharma promising to solve the problem. Firstly, having jabs doesn't solve the root cause of the problem. And secondly, there are always, always side effects from pharmaceutical products. Only last week, Pfizer agreed to settle a court case brought by 10,000 people who went on to get cancer after using the company's heartburn drug Zantac. Now, the thing is, the pharma companies do not care about your health or my health, because when you get ill from one of their drugs, they have another product to sort out that side effect, and so on and so on. A good example is Chris, who was on this show last week, Chris Williams. He got 40% heart failure from taking the AstraZeneca COVID jab. Now, the irony is that some of the heart medicines that he's on to keep him alive and stop his heart failing entirely, guess who the manufacturer is? AstraZeneca. And this is the thing, ladies and gentlemen. going down the pharmaceutical route is merely creating a new customer for life for Big Pharma. This new weight loss jab seems to help people shed lots of weight. There's celebrities that have tried it and lost lots of pounds. However, what the evidence shows is that people put it straight back on again once you don't have the jab anymore. And so effectively, once you start, you will need to go on regular injections for the rest of your life. That is what the evidence is showing us about these jabs. And I fully expect that the consequences for your long-term health will mean taking another product at some point in the future to alleviate a problem that these jabs are causing. That is the business model of Big Pharma, because healthy people are not profitable customers. The sicker their drugs make you, the more you are worth as a customer. And I've got no doubt that this so-called miracle jab will be no different than every other miracle product that Big Pharma has pushed in the past. If you want to get in touch, then email me at jamesfreeman@tntradio.live. And if you want to join in the conversation, there's loads of you in there at the moment. Get yourself over to tntradio.live and click on that chat icon. My name is James Freeman, and this is the Freeman Report for today's News Talk, TNT.
Bringing you a world view.
I like to hear what's going on around the world.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, now before we go to my first guest, we're going to go to our news correspondent, Gemma Cooper, for today's breaking news.
Thank you very much, James. Just a quick one on the weight loss jabs. I mean, it talk about abdicating responsibility as well. We talked about this on the breakfast show, me and Sonia Poulton this morning. It's a jab for everything now, isn't it? You don't have to worry about anything. Take control of your own life. Jab, jab, jab. You know, it's and cutting off the relationship that people have with their bodies. It's a big issue, this one. And you're quite right. The Big Pharma have got only one thing in mind, and that is profit over people. Anyway, on to some breaking stories, unless you want to discuss this one a bit more, because obviously there's a lot of people in the UK on it. One in eight people now on this semi-glutide drug, Ozempic, Wegovy, and Rybelsus, I think that's what it's called. One in eight. And it only came out a few months ago. So, you know, we will start seeing the side effects. Yeah, I know. One in eight people.
I mean, it is tempting, isn't it? Because it kind of says, well, you don't need to do it, because losing weight's difficult, especially with the food we've got today, because it's all addictive. People like all the food that they shouldn't like, because it's designed to do that. It's designed to get you addicted and eat more than what you should. So it is difficult. It's really challenging. I don't mind putting my hands up and saying I should lose some weight. It is really challenging. And so the prospect of a magical injection that you can have, which will the pounds will just fall off, I can see how it'd be very attractive. But for me, absolutely not. Not after what we've seen over the last 4 years. And, you know, I've really woken up to the pharmaceutical industry and what it's all about. Because you'll have to take another pill at some point in the future to counteract the side effects, more than likely coming from this jab. But that is shocking. One in eight people, Gemma.
Yeah, and it's only been available for a few months, and obviously it was brought in initially for diabetes, but obviously people realised what was going on. But yeah, and the side effects, let's just call them effects, nausea, vomiting, diarrhoea, gallstones, which are not pleasant to have. You'll need a pill or a jab to combat those. And also the way the drug works, it's a GLP-1 inhibitor receptor. So it dulls your appetite, but it dulls everywhere else that you've got receptors, or pleasure receptors in the body effectively. So while you don't feel hungry, you don't feel much else either. And the trouble with dulling down receptors is when you then bring them back, as it were, come off the drug, once you've lost the weight, the receptors have kind of been storing up energy a little bit, and then they come back on with full force. So you'll feel hungrier than ever because you've been suppressing the body's own natural way of regulating itself. And also the link between addiction and food, and why are people addicted to food? Why are people addicted to lots of things? Some are saying it's a reaction to just living in a very stressful, messed up world. You know, that's why we have so many addictions. People just can't cope with modern life. So the jab is not the answer. A jab's never the answer. We know that now after the last 4 years. But this is a really complex issue. And of course, the inherent laziness of people to, you know, if you know it's going to take you a year, 2 years, 3 years to lose a significant amount of weight naturally through diet and exercise and put the work in. The Big Pharma know that all humans want a quick fix. We want a quick fix in everything in our lives. We're hardwired that way. We want instant results. So they're really exploiting the human condition here, and the celebrity culture that promotes it as well. That's all part of this mechanism to, you know, to get us. They did it with the COVID jabs, all the celebrities coming out telling us to have it. And now they're all pushing it. This one, it's horrible. It's abhorrent, horrible, yeah. Horrible thing.
And the other thing that's driving this, which is really sad, is a lot of it, I should imagine, is about vanity as well. You know, I'm going on holiday this year. Can't be bothered to go on a diet, or I'm not confident that I'll actually lose some weight. So I can just have this injection and it'll sort everything out. Yeah, very, very worrying. I think I need to, I've read up a little bit on it, but I think I need to do some more reading, because it does seem something that we should devote a show to, I think, at some point on the Freeman Report. Gemma, what other breaking news have you got for us?
Well, assisted dying is on the table in the Parliament in the Isle of Man, just off the coast of the UK. Members of the Isle of Man Parliament, it's not part of the UK, it's a self-governing nation. They are debating assisted dying at the moment. They're going to take a vote on it later as to whether the terminally ill people should be given drugs by doctors, or will they be able to administer the drugs themselves. So this is a debate that's moving forward quite quickly in the Isle of Man. One of the big stories today as well is that the UK Foreign Office summoned the Chinese ambassador for a robust conversation after three men appeared in court yesterday charged with spying for Hong Kong. It's only a week after China's accused of hacking the Ministry of Defense's database. No actual detail of what the conversation was or what was actually said. And he didn't meet with Foreign Secretary, Foreign Office officials. And also, British tourists are being warned that from today, if they travel to parts of Spain, the tourist areas, they face hefty fines for drinking in public. It's been a huge alcohol crackdown in parts of Spain. Ibiza, Mallorca, the big tourist destinations. They say they're sick of British people and other tourists drinking in the streets and fighting. Shops will be closed to selling alcohol from 9:30 at night now. And if you're seen in the streets with any alcohol or behaving rowdily, you could face a €3,000 fine, James.
Whoa, that's a lot of money. I wonder if that'll sort the problem out. I don't really see it. I used to see it in Cardiff here. There's a road called Chip Alley. I don't know whether you've ever been there, Gemma. It used to be absolutely shocking. I mean, they've done whole documentaries and you know, series on TV about it there. People urinating in the streets, all fights, all sorts of stuff. Since the pandemic, though, not so many people going out. But I guess Spain and other places have still got that problem. Right, Gemma, thank you for those stories there. Look forward to speaking with you again tomorrow. To the rest of you, we're going to be talking about the Middle East next with Christine Hart, who is a Sunday Times best-selling author, and she's also a private investigator. So don't go anywhere. Stay right where you are, right here on TNT.
TNT's Alex Zaharoff-Roy.
The longer it takes for a company to do disaster recovery and get back to business, the longer it takes for their customers to be back in contact with, you know, the products and services they're using from the businesses that you're protecting. So, I mean, it's sort of a domino effect. It's not just the company, but all of that company's customers. And these days in the modern era, I mean, as they say for the young people, instant gratification isn't instant enough. I mean, we want disaster recovery to happen in minutes, if not hours, like at the most. And in the past, it could have taken days.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And in fact, where I'm coming to you from Western Canada, our biggest pharmacy chain here had a ransomware attack 4 or 5 days ago, and their stores have literally been closed now for going on day six, where nobody's able to get prescriptions. Like, can you imagine not being able to fill your prescriptions because of a cyber attack? I mean, it's devastating, not just to the business and the people who are financially impacted there, but just to our community in general.
Talking Tech with Alex Zaharoff-Royt on today's News Talk, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Listen up!
Now listen, we gotta talk.
It's what we do best.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, well, I'm delighted to be welcoming back Christine Hart. She is Sunday Times best-selling author and also private investigator. She's been on the Freeman Report quite a few times now. Welcome back, Christine.
James, how are you?
Yeah, I'm not bad. Summer's on its way, which makes me happy.
Oh, I know.
I really.
You've got a tan.
I know. I am a sun worshipper. I cannot stand the winter. I really cannot stand it. It makes me depressed. So I'm happy at the moment. Yeah. Christine, before we move on, we're going to talk about the Middle East and what's going on there, the latest developments. But I'd like to get your opinion. I know I sent you a video earlier of an interview I did yesterday with John Mayer. He's a broadcaster. What did you make of the interview?
Well, it was really interesting. And I found him very interesting because he was talking about, you know, defunding the BBC and, you know, how they have biased reporting. And as you know, I was interviewed recently for a program, Private Eyes in the Press, and they gave me a 3-hour interview. They said no surprises, and yet they confronted me over and over again with different stuff. They took me down to the woods in Richmond Park. There was two of them. They started shouting at me. Good job I was prepared for it. I might have had a heart attack or a stroke or anything. They wanted me to say a certain thing. It was about Sienna Miller. Apparently someone from The Sun had rung up her GP. Absolutely not me. And if you're not guilty of something, you don't go along and allow yourself to be grilled. And I said, look, put the camera really close on me in my eyes. I didn't do it. And this producer, even after the 6 hours altogether of interviewing me, he would ring me every day on a withheld number and said, you've ruined Sienna Miller's life. Now, Sienna Miller's on the front page of Vogue nearly, you know, every month. And, you know, it would be difficult to ruin her life. The program went out. It was absolute rubbish. They had her crying, saying, oh, it was a trauma because a photographer once looked at her breasts, yet she's elsewhere being quoted that she deliberately did a nipple thing and wore her mother's shit so her nipples could show. I mean, they have this completely lovey, woke agenda. And I've done some research about them. And actually, when they went up to film a panorama Young Guns in Liverpool, they couldn't find any young people with guns. So they paid some poor lad to hold this gun. They put a sack over his head, but his father saw his anorak and recognized him and rang the police. The next thing, the police arrived, arrested him. There was a court case. Now, rather than the BBC owning up at that point and saying, well, we paid him £50 to hold that gun, it wasn't someone that we found, they stayed quiet. This young man, and I've spoke to him and he was sobbing. He's now, I believe, about 23. He spent 5 years in prison. And of course, as a young boy, he was roped into, you know, the gangs. And, you know, his mother, Linda, said, you know, it's because of that. He went the wrong way after that. I mean, what the BBC do, it's not just putting out wrong things. They are active. They are active in harming people. They've got an agenda. It's a left-wing woke agenda, communism, whatever, this nonsense that's sweeping us over.
Right. Christine, maybe I was being a bit unfair because I didn't send you the video until, but I can tell you haven't watched it.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I watched half.
Because John, what I wanted to talk about is John basically came on and he was like, you know, the BBC is fantastic. It's a bastion of truth. The vaccines have saved millions of lives. And I guess the way I kind of view that, and I did, you know, I threw lots of questions. I published the interview now and I've asked people to share evidence with John to try and see if we can get him to question things. But it did kind of strike me that this is what we're up against, because it was quite striking how ill-informed and misinformed he was. And so I just wanted to get your kind of opinion on, you know, how much of a problem we've got in the UK with all of these people. And we must have millions of people who are like John, who are just live on a different planet. They think the vaccines save millions of people. They think the BBC always tells the truth. That problem, haven't we?
Yeah, I think at the moment we have two different species of human living on the planet. There's some that can watch little children in Palestine and just say, oh, it's a mass. Well, I don't care what it is. They're little children. So focus on that, you know, and people that believe the BBC and think the government are great, and it doesn't matter that some people are dying of the vaccines, because after all, it might affect a few different people. And they're living alongside other people that are just horrified by the whole mess. So it's almost like humanity is dividing into two different species. Makes me wonder, did we start off like that? Some of us have got open hearts like yourself, and you're thinking, what the hell's going on? And other people are like, everything's fine. You people are crazy. Strange, isn't it?
It is. And I think there is a divide. And I was talking with Emma Rock, actually. She's on the show on Friday. She's been on before. We were talking about this on Friday night, just on X, about empathy and about there seems to be a divide. An awful lot of people across the world at the moment, which they seem to have lost their empathy. You know, they don't really, they can't connect and see other people. You know, when I watch a video, and I really struggle watching these videos where people, I don't know, they're going down the road on a bike, they fall off and it's terrible. They really hurt themselves. Because like, I can feel that. I'm like, oh, that's horrible. There's an awful lot of people, I think, in the world at the moment that just really struggle with empathy. They haven't got any. And what it means is actually the people in charge, we've got psychopaths running the show, haven't we? That have no empathy whatsoever.
None. They're focused on money, and it's almost a satanic thing. I feel it as a satanic thing. The rest of us have got this ascension thing going on. Our consciousness is widening. We're becoming aware of different things. And theirs is just a real something against it. It wants to oppress us. It wants us all vaxxed up. It wants us to dumb down. The BBC are very on side with that. You know, it's propaganda. And they're not going, you know, for our age group. They're going for the young. You know, they want their minds. They want them to join their side. And it is, it's a satanic thing. People are being falsely accused. They don't have any comeback. It's just, they want this satanic control over everywhere, which is terrifying. And the rest of us, we don't really know how to fight back, because I think they are in control everywhere. And I think it's too late. It feels like game over in some kind of way.
Yeah, this conversation went on a long time on Friday night, because I think this is the answer actually to solving the problems, because they clearly want to isolate all of us. That was partly what they wanted to do in COVID, why they shut the pubs, why they shut places where we mix, because if we're not mixing with other people in person, then you kind of start to lose your empathy. You know, handshakes is a part of that. When you shake someone's hand, it's about making a connection with them, a physical connection where you almost download each other and you're in that moment together, and then you understand each other and you can move on and have a conversation. I think the world, you know, forget love, empathy is actually the problem in the world. Now, we're going to take a short break for the news headlines, and when we come back, I want to talk about that, because I think a big problem with the Middle East and why literally we're watching a genocide happen in front of our eyes, it's being broadcast around the world, is because of a lack of empathy, I think, from people around the world. So Christine, stay where you are. We'll be right back with you right in a second, right here on TNT.
Question.
Huh? What are you guys doing today?
The news.
TNT Radio News.
Sounds good.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. There's outrage in Australia, where a former military lawyer who helped expose Australian war crimes in the Middle East has been thrown in jail.
I may have broken the law, but I did not break my oath to the Australian people.
OpenAI has launched a new flagship model that can reason across audio, vision and text in real time. And the US State Department has expressed its doubts that Israel is capable of completely eradicating Hamas.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio, or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Yeah, so Christine, let's start with that. Does it surprise you that more people are not saying and standing up and saying this needs to be stopped around the world? What's going on in the Middle East?
I think there's a group of people, there's a whole mass of people that believe it's a war, that, you know, that you talk to them, you see them on Twitter and they're talking about Hamas, it's terrorists, and they don't actually care. They're very much in their head rather than their heart. And I actually don't know how they can see children and not care about sides, not care about UNS terrorists. Just think about the children and just go crazy because we're grown-ups and we're supposed to be protecting little children. A friend of mine said when it all started, he said, they're going to kill them all, aren't they? And I thought, well, no, they're not. I mean, how would they do that? But they're actually killing them all. It's strange. And I think as well, people think, well, it's going to stay over there. Well, an energy like that, a force like that, no. It's going to need another victim. I mean, we here in the West might be its new victim. So all these people standing there thinking, oh, it's terrorists. I mean, we might well be the next for all of that Hunger Games scenario or another COVID or anything really, more lethal vax. I mean, it could just come piling on here as well.
And what did you think about the fact that, of course, Israel now is ordering Palestinians in Rafah and other places now? A lot of those people have fled from Gaza elsewhere. They've got nowhere to go. And I'm suspicious that what's actually going to happen is the border is eventually going to be opened with Egypt. Lots of people are going to flee there because they've got nowhere to go. And of course, that'll be the last they see of their homeland because they will not be allowed back in. I think this is a full-on genocide, and you know that Israel have got plans for that area of land.
Yes, 100%. They have got plans. I don't know whether it's a canal or gas or something, but they have got plans for it. Yes, so all our world leaders, not just Israel, the UK with Rishi, he has his business interests in Tel Aviv, America. I mean, we're all Israel, really. We're saying we're all Palestine, but actually we're all Israel. So yeah, there's plans for that. I mean, I said to a Palestinian friend, I hope the border is open with Egypt and they are allowed to go over. At least they'll still be alive. But what I'm worried about is just they're all going to be wiped out and there won't be any opening, that they will just be murdered, because it's easier that way. And we all have to live with this. It's really quite horrifying that we all have to live with this. And then people talk about other wars in other areas. And, oh, why aren't you talking about that? Well, I don't know about that, you know. So once something is in front of you, you see it and it's shocking. We're not sort of saying it's horrific just because we're taking sides. You just see dead children and you see their limbs. And it's really makes you aware of the world we're living in. I mean, they say it's the age of Aquarius, don't they? Where before that evil existed, but it was hidden. Now we're entering the age of Aquarius and the evil is going to be all out and shown on the surface. So we've always been living in a very evil world.
Oh, we definitely have, yeah. Do you think, because I mean, my question is, you know, are you surprised more people aren't shouting about this? But also, I'm very, very suspicious of the length of control, the depth of control that Israel have on the West. Because whenever I put up a post about Israel, you know, I've got a good feel. I've been on social media a long time. I've got lots of followers. I've got a good feel for whether a post hits the mark and whether it's going to be, you know, I can't tell whether it's going to go viral, but I know whether it's going to take off or not. And whenever I put a post up about Israel, it goes nowhere, even if I get a few big accounts to reshare it. Do you think actually that's maybe what's going on here, that more people in the West are shouting about this than people realize, and actually this is just the censorship machine?
It might be. Yes, you're right. I've never thought of that. When I share stuff on that kind of thing on Facebook, it's okay on my Twitter, even though I don't seem to get many likes on it. I didn't actually think about that. When you put anything on Facebook immediately, but I think I'm shadow banned anyway, in which case, you know, you put anything up, you moan about something and then it just suddenly you have loads of likes on it, you know, but you put anything about anything politically or anything in that direction and it just sits there. So I think, yeah, we are being manipulated in that way, 100%. And you're right, there are probably people that haven't actually seen, and a lot of people that don't really want to look. I have a lot of friends that say, oh, I don't want to look at that. Or why are you looking? You know, why are you looking at that? Why do you want to look at dead children? It's like, what? No, I just want to see what kind of world we're living in. And I want to awaken myself, it is why. I want to galvanize myself. I want to find out what should I be doing right now is why I'm looking. But there's a lot of that that goes on. Like, you know, why are you looking? It's morbid. Go out and go for a nice walk. Human beings are like that, though. We have an ability to say, I'm all right, Jack. And, you know, that person is happening over there. Doesn't matter. I need to have my fun. I need to lighten my frequency. There's a lot of that in the New Age movement. Lift your frequency. Don't be watching the news. That, again, is a kind of false, you know, godly thing. It's not godly to not look at little children suffering. It's happening. Look at it. Look at it.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing you raise there, actually, because, you know, I think if you watch the news all the time and you take everything as a burden on your shoulders, you know, things you can't control, essentially, you know, that's not healthy, you know, and so it's very, very difficult balance to get. And some people that have been critical of certainly my reporting about Israel have been like, why are you not talking about all the other wars going on at the moment and all the children? Yeah. And I guess... Yeah. I guess my response to that, what I've said to those people is, well, it's the scale of things and the disproportionality of this conflict. You know, Israel, yes, it was pretty horrific what happened, but just over 1,000 Israelis were killed. And quite a lot of them, actually, there's a lot of evidence they were killed by Israeli gunships who were trying to shoot down Hamas. And when you look at the number of Palestinian civilians that have been killed in this, innocents as well, children that never voted Hamas in, they've never had a say on all of this. When you look at how many thousands have now been killed, you cannot, if you've got a conscience, you cannot look at that and not comment on it and say, enough, enough.
Mm. Well, our leaders should be doing that, but they're not, are they? I mean, we are ruled by people that are... you know, that are really dark. And it feels really horrible because really in a normal world, we'd be ruled by wise ones, you know, really wise people. But it's the same. It's the BBC, it's the court system. It's all has these really dark-natured individuals that have got to the top. And it does really feel like game over. It feels like they've been working on this for a long time. They've been playing the long game. It's too late now. It's too late. Everything feels as if it's too late.
Well, come on, we can't finish the interview on that. I am optimistic about the world, but I do see what's going on, and I think things are going to get worse before they get better. But I do think we've got a problem here in the sense that, you know, there's that old adage, you know, that those who want power should never be allowed anywhere near it. And I think that's the problem we've got in the world. I think those with no empathy, who are psychopaths, are in charge of the world at the moment. And all of the rest of us who have got empathy and care about other people are being censored and cancelled so that we cannot influence events. Christine, thank you very much for joining me again. Hopefully you'll come back again soon. But we're going to leave it on a positive note because I do think there are lots of people now waking up, which if enough of us wake up, then we will change things. So if you haven't posted any evidence for John, who I interviewed yesterday, yeah, get yourself over to X and post that evidence and let's try and wake John up. One person down, another few million to go. Right, thank you very much, Christine. We're going to take a short break now, and when we come back, I am going to be talking with Mitch Brown. He is a pollster and director of political strategy, and we're going to be talking about Trump and whether he is in stormy waters. And we'll also be talking about Biden. I've not seen much of him recently, and whether he will make it to the election this year. So don't go anywhere. Stay right where you are, right here on TNT.
Sometimes life can be overwhelming, and suicide may seem like the only way to relieve the pain. Beyond Now is an evidence-based app created by Beyond Blue to help you cope when suicidal thoughts start to appear. You can use it to create an easy-to-follow plan that is personal to you and includes steps like... know your warning signs so you can act early. Make your environment safe by removing harmful items, activities you can do or people you can be with to distract yourself from suicidal thoughts. Reminders of things that make you feel strong. Some of these steps might be tough to fill out, and that's okay. It can be helpful to make or share your safety plan with a trusted friend, family member, or mental health professional. You might feel like you're alone, but help is available. If you're worried you can't stay safe, use the red telephone icon to call your emergency contacts. Download the free Beyond Now app today to create your personal safety plan.
My dad was a farmer. The guy was bigger than life. He wasn't someone that liked to show his emotion or liked to show when he was struggling, but we all struggle. I want to show emotion to my kids. It's something that brings me so much joy, and I want them to see me working through things. Allow your kids to know that it's okay to struggle, that even dad doesn't know the answer sometimes, but we're gonna figure it out together.
You're with James Freeman and the Freeman Report on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, so we're going to jump over the pond for this last segment of today's Freeman Report. I'm delighted to be welcoming Mitch Brown to the Freeman Report for the first time. He is a pollster and director of political strategy. Welcome to the Freeman Report, Mitch.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for coming on the show. Mitch, let's start off with Trump. Is he in stormy waters?
No, I mean, the more stormies out there, the better this is for Trump. This kind of just goes back to all the trials. I mean, if you look back 6 months ago, people said this was the end of Trump, that he's got litigation pending federally in Florida and New York, criminal, civil, all of this. And look where we're at now. We have Stormy Daniels and Michael Cohen going up there, two certified liars going out there to smear the president. We have, again, a classified documents trial that is postponed because, again, the president had immunity in that case. And then we have, again, countless other trials that are just going to be favorable for Trump. People see this now as the partisan play that it is. Even CNN last night had coverage that when they're going and talking to battleground state swing voters, that they see this as a direct political attack and not legitimate legal issues.
And what's the latest on, because Trump's been warned, hasn't he, about speaking about the trial. I was reading about that last week. What's the latest on that?
Yeah, I believe the gag order is still in effect, but they say that the gag order is just for people who are testifying so that he can't speak about Cohen or Daniels themselves. He can comment on the trial. But again, Michael Cohen's going on TikTok Live every night to talk about the trial and to collect money.
Really? So they're allowed to talk about the trial, but Trump isn't?
Yes, despite them both being public figures.
And how much of a risk do you think it is that, because I've heard, you know, claims that he could go to prison if he keeps on speaking out. How much of a risk is that, do you think?
Well, again, it depends who you ask. If you ask the Trump team, it's not a risk. I mean, I worked for President Trump in the White House. He would gladly go sit in prison for 4 days for this. And it would, again, only do things better for him come election season. Again, everyone sees this as a sham it is, and especially the groups that are going to respond best to this. Are some of the groups that he's been targeting. Again, we're looking at minority voters here who are going to see Trump as under attack from a legal system that they feel has also attacked them in the past.
And once this case is rolled up, whatever happens, is that it now, do you think? Or do you think another case, another court, because obviously there's lots of things backed up. I haven't got my list here, but I think there was about seven different you know, legal cases, lawfare cases against Trump that are waiting in the lines. But given the fact that we have got, or you have got in the US, a presidential election later this year, do you think it's feasible that they can bring another case to try and prevent him from campaigning?
No, I don't believe so. And I think soon we're going to have the ruling from the Supreme Court that he is granted presidential immunity. Again, the January 6th trial, another one that they're again, not going to be able to prosecute. So again, I think we're going to see Trump and Biden on the top of the ticket. And again, all of this was another 6 months to a year distraction, just like we've seen in the past.
Yeah, let's hope so. Let's hope so. Mitch, let's talk about illegals. Obviously, I've had lots of people on the show from the US in the last few weeks talking about how this is a planned mass immigration into America, and that one of the objectives, there's many objectives, but one of them is to try and impact future elections. And there's even talk about it affecting this election and illegals, undocumented US citizens. Well, that's what they're being called by the Democrats. In essence, they are illegals. But there are quite strong moves now, aren't there, to try and ensure that they're not able to vote this year. How is that going? What's the latest at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, the House is bringing that up currently. But again, the Senate's not going to sign it. And so it's never going to reach Biden's desk, and Biden would veto it anyway. So again, we're in a position where, again, in certain states, there's nothing that can stop illegals from voting. And so anyone who says that they already can't vote, that's not the case. If you go look at a state like Wisconsin, there is no way of stopping illegals from voting. And so, again, we're seeing that. And we went through, there was a bunch of good documents that were released last night, actually, that show all of the NGOs and different paid organizations who are making money off this immigration crisis through contracts with the Biden administration. They're taking illegals and flying them around the U.S. to enter them to the country. And there's NGOs that are receiving grants from the Biden administration to do this.
So just explain to the viewers, because I think people in other countries are going to be a bit confused about this. If somebody is not a U.S. citizen, how can they vote? Because in the U.K., for example, you have to register with the Electoral Commission. You know, they send out cards to your house. You keep them updated. You're on the electoral register. You cannot vote if you're not registered. How can these illegals vote in the U.S.?
Yeah, so it varies state by state in America. There is no federal election law in the sense of how you can go register. So just for an example, I know I already mentioned Wisconsin. I was a poll observer and ran, again, part of the Trump campaign in Wisconsin in 2020. And all that's required to go vote, I had people that were coming up that couldn't speak English, and they could register to vote the day of, and they were coming in with a bill, like from a Wi-Fi provider, internet provider or anything, and a student ID. And they were granted the right to vote in Wisconsin. So again, each state has different levels of what it can be, but you're also, even the illegals who enter here and work are given social security numbers. And in some states, that's all you need to go register to vote.
And there's no regulator or anything checking up on this afterwards?
Again, it varies state by state. So there's going to be some states where it's impossible to do so. But there's some states where you don't have to show ID. You don't have to do anything else to go and vote. So they're already on the registry, and because they pay a bill at an address in America, or they have a social from working. But again, they're not legal citizens and they can vote. So again, anyone who's saying that that's not happening currently is not aware of the facts.
Yeah, and I have seen videos on X in the last couple of days of officials. I don't know what her name is, but she was basically sending a warning message out to illegals to say, if you vote in this election, you might be able to vote, but actually you're breaking US law. Some quite strong punishments to that. Do you think that is going to put any of these illegals off voting?
They're already committing a crime. They've already entered the country illegally. They're already receiving benefits illegally. So saying, hey, you're doing something else illegal, I don't think is going to stem that.
Yeah. It's a real
problem.
We can
say, no, this is bad behavior all we want. But again, if you're not going to enforce it and there is no actual punishment, is it really illegal?
Yeah. And what do you think the reaction will be from, I mean, it's going to be on the Republican side, if we see an election this year and it's clear that it's been stolen because of this problem and other, voting irregularities. What kind of reaction do you think we're going to see from the public in America?
Well, I mean, hopefully, again, with the new changes at the RNC and the Trump campaign dedicating resources into the states that have had these issues before. Again, you even see certain states like Georgia has now passed new election laws so that mail-in ballots have to be stopped counted at a certain time during the night so that we're not having people dump ballots at 2, 3 a.m. when there's no poll observers. Again, so not what the reaction is going to be. It's how do Republicans confront this leading up to election and on election day. So we're not, you can't put the genie back in the bottle, like in 2020. That was the issue there, is everyone's trying to litigate something that already happened, which means you already lost. It's preventing it this time around that Republicans are focusing on right now.
Yeah, and let's hope that doesn't happen, because there's a lot of people, I think, looking on at America that are really worried about what could happen if another election is perceived, whether it is or not, to be stolen by voting irregularities. Let's talk about the economy, Mitch. How is the U.S. economy at the moment?
For your everyday working person, it's not going well. Everything is more expensive. The Bureau of Labor Statistics, who, again, documents inflation in America, had to just remove coffee off of its index. They said that it won't be factored into inflation anymore because coffee is 67% more expensive in America right now. Again, when you're going to the gas station, when you're going to the grocery store, when you're going out to eat, things are ridiculously expensive. There's no way you can eat in this country going out for under $10 anymore. And people are feeling the brunt of this. And so people can say there's no inflation, but every day I'm doing focus groups across the country and running polls, and this is having a devastating impact on people's day-to-day lives. So you couple that with the border, those two issues are going to be driving people to Trump. Even voters who normally wouldn't be able to stomach Trump, they can't live this way. Their life was so much different in 2019. They can't financially afford to vote for Biden.
And what do people think is the cause of this inflation?
Yeah, I mean, it's our out of control debt or out of control spending. Again, rate cuts aren't going to change this. I mean, again, we're over $35 trillion in debt as it is. We keep spending money. There's no end in sight. We're not manufacturing things in America. So again, everything has to come from overseas. So until we onshore those production, these costs are just going to rise and rise, and wages are not rising with them. So again, it's not only are things more expensive, we also have to stop, again, outside groups from doing this. You can't go buy a home in America right now. We're currently allowing big banks and funds to buy all these homes. 41% of all residential property purchases were made by ETFs or BlackRock or Vanguard last year. So Americans can't go buy a home. And at the same time, rents are at an all-time high. So again, every factor in the economy is bashing your working man today.
And how does this affect, obviously, Ukraine is a huge thing. The House and the Senate passed a bill recently sending more tens and tens of billions to Ukraine. What do Americans think of that? Do they look at that at times when they haven't got any money? How do they feel about that?
Yeah, the only people who are currently supporting Ukraine are the people who work and live in Washington, D.C., and the people who make over $250,000 a year. You're going to be hard-pressed to find anyone else in the country who wants to send more money to one of the most corrupt places on earth when they can't afford food at their own home. So again, it's an issue it's not even really that partisan anymore. You're finding almost 50% of Democrats, 60% of independents, and over 3/4 of Republicans that are anti-funding Ukraine.
Yeah, and let's talk about Biden as well. I've got a couple of questions. My first question to you is going to be, look, you know, he's 82. This is all about another 4 years in government, this presidential election. It's not an end in itself. And it's clear that his performance as president is getting worse and worse. I don't even know where he's been the last few weeks. I've not seen him on the TVs. He doesn't do press conferences anymore. When he turns up to do a speech, it's clear that, you know, he gets a few dozen people compared to Trump filling stadiums. Do you really think the Democrats are going to put him up as their candidate? Because, of course, they could change him in August at the national convention.
They could, but they're not going to. They don't really have another plausible candidate right now. Their math is just hoping the same thing happens. Because, again, they ran a campaign in 2020 where he didn't come out of a basement. And they won. So, again, with their calculus, you're not going to go put someone who's the governor of California up on the top of the ticket. He's not going to win. The vice president certainly can't run for president. She's less liked than Joe Biden is. So they don't have a deep bench right now. And how donors are looking at it, they don't have many options. So they're going to roll with the tide. They're confident of that. And it's kind of the situation right now.
So why you say there's another pandemic coming then? Because, of course, he only got away with that because because, of course, we were in the middle of COVID, weren't we? I'm not sure that he's going to be able to hide in a basement this time around, surely.
Well, I mean, I'm hearing alarming things that apparently a bird flu is coming again. The FDA just put something out about that, so we'll see.
And yeah, we are hearing reports about that. Tell us about that, because from what I see, we're hearing it's a virus now that's spreading in cows, bird flu that's spreading in cows.
Yeah, I'm not an expert on this topic. I guess we'll see what comes down. I mean, people are going to be very wary of trusting whatever the government says about whatever the new strain of virus is coming out. So again, there's going to be some new issue because, again, these court cases are going to wrap up. There has to be something because the media is going to do it. Since Trump started running, there's been Russian collusion, impeachment, Ukraine. Every time that they have to make an issue of something. So for certain, there's going to be something that happens in August that's going to carry through the election.
Yeah. And you say that American voters are feeling the pinch at the moment. They're struggling to afford things. What's the state of the US economy as we approach that election? Do you think things are going to improve or do you think things are going to get worse?
For them to have an impact on voters, the economy would have to change tenfold. Again, from where it is currently, it can get a little bit better. It could get a little bit worse. It would have to get significantly better. Gas would have to be under $2 for things visibly to change for people. Again, the economy is worse than it was in February when people thought it was at an all-time low. So again, it's going to have to be a sizable shift, which I don't see a course correction that quickly. So it's going to be the top issue.
Yeah. No, I definitely think it's going to be the same in the UK as well. The economy and migration, I think the same as the US. And what about those US banks? We've been hearing for months now about the fact that there's a lot of regional banks that are underwater at the moment. Is there any risk, do you think, of some kind of crash happening before the election?
I mean, I think the banks are fine because even when they do crash, they're insured here. I mean, people would be more worried about the housing market or the actual stock market crashing. Yeah, I mean, there's a run on the banks when they close, but all these banks are FDIC insured currently. So, I mean, I wouldn't worry about it in that sense. I just worry about the overall market collapsing, people losing things again, like circa 2008.
And finally, Mitch, give us your assessment. What do you think is going to happen in this year's election then?
Yeah, I believe Donald Trump is going to be the 45th and 47th president of the United States. Republicans are going to take the Senate and Republicans are most likely going to lose the House.
And what do you think the first thing he's going to do when he gets into office?
First executive order, again, I worked on this when I was in the Trump administration, is tackling the deep state bureaucracy. So Schedule F is positioning our bloated bureaucracy and being able to remove people in positions that are not there to help the current administration.
So plenty for us to talk about next year as well. We said at the start of this year that it was going to be a bumpy year. Got loads of elections around the world, including in the UK, the US, obviously. But it sounds like if Trump gets in, he's going to keep us busy again next year with lots to talk about. Mitch Brown, thank you so much for joining me on the Freeman Report. Please do come again on the show again soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Right, that's it for today. But don't go anywhere. We've got more great shows coming up and I'll be back again tomorrow to do the whole thing again right here on TNT.